waters of Babylon like a rebel fish. Journalist, specialist, predator and survivalist. Spitting heaven fire from his lips. Burn the slave driver.
Welcome, listeners, to time for an awakening on Black Talk Radio Network, new media for the new millennia. This is a history and current events program from a cultural perspective. We find this program necessary because Hosea 4:6 states my people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge, but we as a people can turn this around. Proverbs 4:7 states, wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom with all thy getting. Get an understanding. Again, welcome to the program this evening with your hosts, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. The number to reach us to join the conversation this evening is 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We're streaming live at several locations. You can go to timeforanawakening.com, which is the homepage, and listen to the live stream there. You can go to blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. Again, that's blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening and listen to the live stream from that location. Also, you can go to ourradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. Again, that's ourradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening and listen to the live stream there also. Or you can download TuneIn to any of your handheld devices. TuneIn is a free app. And in that TuneIn search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening. There you'll see the icon and you can stream the program live, even into your car. That's Time for an Awakening radio program with the live stream on the TuneIn app. Drop us an email at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. That's timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Time for an Awakening also has a fan page on Facebook. In that Facebook search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening radio program. There you always see interesting content being posted daily. And before you leave that page, do me a favor and hit that like button. That's Time for an Awakening radio program with the fan page on Facebook. And Time for Awakening Media home base is there. It should be one of your favorites by this time. If not, can you make that one of your favorites and put that in your address bar? That's timeforanawakening.com. We'll take you straight to Time for an Awakening Media. There you'll see more interesting content, blogs, podcasts, or the programs that you can download, listen at later times, or even share with your friends. New changes are becoming to timeforawakening.com soon, very soon. And you can download other programs that air on Time for Awakening and share those also. So again, make that one of your favorites. Put that in your address bar. That's timeforanawakening.com. Timeforanawakening.com will take you straight to Time for an Awakening Media. Tonight, we were scheduled to have a special guest join us, but he had to cancel prior engagement. But he'll be joining us next week. We'll kind of billboard those things on the Friday's program. So we're in open forum this evening. The floor is yours. Anything that's on your mind, you can give us a call at 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We'll be right back to get the program started after a brief word from our sponsors.
Mr. Moderator, our distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, our friends and our enemies. Everybody is here.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services if when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
Overworked? Suffering with an underperforming company, headache customer, staff, or vendors? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? We turned a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one transformation created for entrepreneurs like you in various industries around the country. Not what you're used to from accounting and business consulting? Well, welcome to New Business Solutions. If you're ready to go beyond advising, coaching, and training and get implemented results, call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions apply the best comprehensive administrative, accounting, operations, human resources, management, sales, and marketing to help you actualize your vision for yourself and your company. From anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072. Spelled new as in numerous on your device right now. Book your free consultation at newbusinesssolutions.com.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening with your host, Brother Elliot. Sundays, 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. for podcasting or live program scheduling. Hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. And before we get started with our program this evening, I want to welcome in my co-host, Philadelphia activist and tour guide at the African American Museum here in Philadelphia. Brother Richard is with us. Brother Richard.
Yes, sir, Brother Elliot.
Man, I'm telling you, it's always something, man. I'm running late and getting in here and just getting started, but I'm glad that the listening audience is still here, and I'm sorry for the lateness. Got to apologize, but things always happen, pop up, and I'm glad that everybody's still here. How you doing today, Brother Richard?
It's been a slow Sunday. I'm going to bring up about our big full moon that's we're experiencing. And because of that, I guess I'm going to use it as an excuse. I'm kind of like just have cruised through the day, wondering about certain things. But overall, I've been doing good. I take it your day has been okay.
Yeah. Besides this mishap that been happening here, a little traffic tie up here caught me kind of off guard here, but I'm glad I'm back and we're here. So it's no problem.
Yeah. It's good. And I guess I was looking forward to the possibility of our the guest that you had scheduled, because the whole thing of, you know, dealing with it's been on my mind, Elliot, this how do we go about community development? I mean, how do we actually organize ourselves to think from the perspective of sovereignty, but actually take control of the condition that we're in? You know, when I think about the tax, it looks like that tax bill might go through. And
It is. They did vote on it. It's going.
Oh, they did. Yeah. It just and the effect that it will have on us, you know, and then looking at the general condition of the community I'm around, and it makes me wonder that, you know, how do we go about this to where it isn't just a an intellectual exercise, more than just, you know, as you say often, strategies that we're implementing. And I know there are people that are doing things out of the value system of as a cooperative, as a cooperative looking out at the community in general compared to looking out for themselves. But and sometimes I guess it raises the question, what are the things we have to do when we look at the institutions and the state of the general state that we're in? So overall, with all that aside, things, you know, you keep your spirit up, you keep going. Black people actually can make things happen. As they say, make a way out of no way. And for this generation and generations to come, I'm confident that's what we'll do. But that has me thinking for right now.
Yeah, well, we'll next week we're scheduled to have Brother Cali Okuna join us. He was one of the authors of the Jackson Cush plan that put Chokwe Lumumba in office until his untimely passing, and put Chokwe Antar Lumumba in office. We had Kamal Franklin on that talked about the plan, their bumps and bruises, so to speak, their back and forth to try to nail down how they wanted to approach this political system, because a lot of men didn't want to deal with it, but they knew that they had to. So the men had to come up with a strategy how they were going to approach it. We're going to talk with Brother Okuna to get to the nuts and bolts of how they did this, or how they accomplished it, how they plan to move forward. Because, listen, while we're here and while this system is intact, we have to have some type of political strategy. That's clear, Richard.
Right.
It has to be. You know, I was of the mindset that, you know, this politics is dirty, which it is. And, you know, we shouldn't be involved. But we have to be involved for the sake of some of our people, especially while we're here. We can't approach it from this European mindset. That's one thing we can't do, because we see the results of that. But we have to develop a strategy on how we're going to use this as a tool to get some of our needs met while we're here. So we have to develop a political strategy. Men that have done it, men that have accomplished some things to put certain people with different cultural black mindsets, Pan-African mindsets in office. That's somebody that. Wait a minute, hold on. I'm getting a little interference in the background. Maybe that's you. They've accomplished doing this. So it has to be a blueprint for us, especially in these cities like Philadelphia and others, where we got a lot of black politicians, but they have a European mindset. They've adopted European mentalities and approaches towards politics, and we can't have that. It's no way our people can advance with that type of thinking. We need to develop people with our interests at heart that can advance things that's going to help our communities and our people and our families. So it's got to be a way that that we can remove these charlatans and collaborators out of these seats and put more people in there that have a race mentality in mind.
Yeah, I would suggest to the listening audience to go to Brother Okuno's essay he did in the Black Agenda Report, talking about the Jackson Plan, because you know, Ellie, we've been talking to a lot of brothers and sisters in different cities. In doing just that, how they are going about it, right? I'm one that had always believed, I didn't believe in the political process, but I thought that that you should be able to use the political machinery, I mean, the voting process or balloting process, as I learned from being a part of 1 Million Conscious and Conscientious Black Voters and Contributors as an organizing tool, because people are Black people are who participate are already engaged in it. But one thing that I always believe is that, as you say, in order you shouldn't necessarily go in there thinking, utilizing this machine, thinking that you're going to get that it's to work for Black people, but you should be able to utilize it to help organize and then participate to get the resources that you can get in that environment. But I was adamant and am adamant that you can't do that unless you self-organize first. And that's one thing, reason why I like Brother Kuna's essay, because and what they attempted, and Brother Kamau mentioned it when we were interviewing about the, for example, the People Assembly, organizing the People Assembly, meaning that you have a political entity which that is solely governing, that's governed off of a consensus or some kind of a cooperative process and decision making before you actually participate in utilizing the electoral process, so that you have your strategy. And like, again, 1 million conscious and conscientious Black voters and contributors, you have your platform before you engage in the process using the political machinery, so that you can hold yourself accountable and those people that you send to that in that political part, political apparatus, be able to hold them accountable. And more importantly, be clear what you're trying to get from it, even though you know that they're not trying to give you anything. You know, and that's, I think that three steps of having Black people self-governing and then identifying individuals to participate in the electoral process, and then having the mechanism to have a platform, policy, and agenda to where you can hold yourselves, that individual representative, and you can have accountable, and then have expectations of what you're trying to go after. And then in the political machinery, those goods and services that the government provides, and we pay taxes also, and therefore we should get our benefit from, whether they give it or not, we'll still be governing ourselves. That's what I've always believed. And that experiment is constantly, for a lot of reasons, in relationship to why we haven't consolidated. We don't have good examples of consolidating that and showing that the what's that? The positive outcome sometimes concerns me.
Yeah. Well, that's why we, you know, on this program try to highlight some of the men that are out there, because there are men out there. In fact, Zaki Baruti just sent me, and I'll try to look for it during a break, a press release of a statement that they're making in front of that St. Louis City Hall or whatever, Hall of their representatives or whatever, in reference to a demand that the people are making. I see that Brother O'Malley Yeshiteli is down there today. They had a function where he was speaking at down there. Zaki Baruti was with him. So those men are still networking together mm-hmm. with the plans that they have. We heard from Reverend Dana Tatman with her group, No Justice, No Profit. They're there. The mass arrests are still going on. The people are still disrupting commerce in St. Louis. You don't hear it hitting the news. Once in a while it hit the news when they had those mass arrests, but they're mm-hmm. still doing it. So, you know, we talked Friday about Cam Howard and what they were doing in Chicago with the press release that they had there and the demands on with Rahm Emanuel and others. So, you know, we see that in Cali, the Brother Acuna, who plans to be with us next week, we see that in areas there is people that are organizing and pushing forward. With our people, seem to be a reverse migration going on with a lot of our people moving back south. It has to be some type of strategy where we're going in these areas. You can't just move in these areas and just be living like we did 80, 75 years ago when we were down south. If we're moving back south, then we have to have some type of political strategy to develop goods and services to meet the needs of our people.
And I agree. And it's you know, and thinking about it, and this is where I hope for, you know, the listening audience, you know, Elliot, I have I get feedback that I have a tendency to being abstract, you know, and in looking at this, you know, because I really would like to see at one point in our generation for African people, American African people, to establish, operate as either a national entity. And what I mean by a national entity, and that we have identified ourselves and created out of that self-identification an economy to produce not just to produce the well-being through the goods and services that we provide each other, and in that excellence, be able to offer in trade. And, you know, and thinking about this, Elliot, you know, it comes back to as we move or we look over the landscape of ourselves, you know, that means that we have to truly get back to the point of, or at least raise the question, well, can we get back to the point of being what we call communal, cooperative, and collective? Because there's no sense in going back, say, to the South, and you're going back with this value system of being a individual, whether you overtly say it or you undercover say it, that you're bringing this, you're going there with this me mindset. I'm going there, you know, because I find it's cheaper to live. I'm not going there because it's necessary. I'm offering my skills and services to help build a community more than I'm going there to exploit a community. And even if it's not intentional or negative, but, you know, to be able to create that communal, cooperative, and collective mindset or value system so that we can create the economy, so that we can have the social relationship, so that we can actually govern ourselves within the American nation state apparatus or without, being without outside the American nation state apparatus, and be able to protect and provide sustenance and safety and health. I guess that's what in all the examples of all the formations you mentioned, I know those men and women, that's what we want. But it's bringing that to fruition is the, constantly we have to keep evaluating. But the question of evaluating our own value system, because a lot of people go, they go looking for themselves, Elliot. I mean, they thinking that I'm coming to rescue you. I'm coming to make it better for me compared to this is what we have to do. And this is how we can do it.
Well,
and
I think
asking the question, can we?
I think conditions are going to kind of force a change in some people's mentality. The overwhelming prevailing mentality is our people realize that they're in trouble, but we don't know the strategies to move our people forward. Some people are depending on politicians to do it. In fact, not some. A lot of our people have been depending on politicians to do it, African-American politicians, because they volunteered to step forward to act like they want to do it. But it's becoming more and more obvious that they don't have the community's interest at heart. So, the mechanisms are there. When people move back to other areas, it's already people there doing work. Right. Some of the people in different areas of the country we've highlighted. In fact, I want to get Brother Smith back on with the National African American Gun Association, with those chapters that's been started in a lot of states. He said that you could start a chapter with at least three people. So these trainings, whether it's self-defense, political involvement, social awareness, cultural awareness, all of these things are going on in different states and in different cities. It's already going on. Our people just need to go in and join in. And keep in mind that the reason they don't know about these things, because the propaganda in the country where we live keeps our people mind befuddled, whether it's the television, whether it's them listen to radio, where most of the programs is a bunch of foolishness all the time, highlighted by syndicated programs in the mornings where they laughing and joking and doing Amos and Andy satires, all that crap, instead of highlighting some of the things that our people are doing. That's positive, and that's moving our people forward. It's out there. Educating our children independent, I ain't talking about no charter school. I'm talking about independent African-centered schools. These things are out here. We just got to get behind them, fund them. If you're not participating, at least fund them. It kind of takes me back. My brother traveling home about 3-4 months ago goes through the intersection, and this Asian guy slams right into his car. So he gets out, stops the guy, and, exchanging information. The Philadelphia police don't stop anymore with accidents. You got to exchange information on your own.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no, I didn't know that.
No, they don't do it unless somebody's hurt. Just like two cars collide and the fender benders, then they don't come out for that anymore. You call them, they won't come. And they let you know that they don't come out for that. But anyway, he exchanged information with this Asian guy, and he spoke English, but it was highly accented, broken. So he gives him a card, and there's an Asian person on there that had insurance. So he said, wait a minute, what is this you giving me? It's my insurance. So he said he calls people right on the site. Another Asian woman answered. Her English is broken. He said, hey, man, what is this? What is this scam? The woman said, no, this is the insurance company. Come to find out, it was real. And they paid for his car. Now, I mean, that's just an example of these people networking with one another.
There you go.
With an Asian insurance company, neither one of them can barely speak English, but they're networking with one another.
And covering it.
And see, black people, some of our people, they done beat our people down so badly. Oh, and like you said, and covering the damages. They done beat our people down so badly. We think that we can't do these things. Other people are doing it all the time, and they don't see no difficulty in doing it. The only thing that we got to get over is the mindset that our people had adopted from being here with Europeans. That's the only thing. That ain't monumental. That's something that that a mind can do, just like if somebody's on drugs or somebody drinks all the time. You got to make a decision that I'm not going to be on drugs, or I'm not going to be an alcoholic. When you make that decision, then you can change your mindset. It's the same thing we're dealing with. When I hear people talking about we can't do, we ain't going to never do this, I'm saying, like, what the hell? I mean, just step out the way. We don't even need your kind.
But it's a lot of, you know, you by saying it, you know, that's such a perfect example of the network, because, you know, you see these and I don't, you just like we used to use the J people all the time. They give the example of their social network and what they can do. Now is we see that the Asians and you'll see a lot more of the Latino community, where that social networking, you know, how can they be able to raise these stores, and how can they be able to provide these here kind of other kind of services? I mean, they build their churches and their social relation, their social provide their social services, you know, out of their own resources. And I'm not naive and not thinking for Asian quote unquote Americans and Latin Americans, or, you know, Mexicans or Puerto Rican, that they don't use the political process and get resources from that in order to assist. But they do use their private social network, their private social capital, their private financial capital, to build some fundamental things, even if it's employment for themselves. And that's not a bad thing. Plus, their numbers are smaller than ours, and they're more recent than us. So why is it so difficult? You know, that's the question. Not, and I agree with you, Ellie.
It's a mind. It's, you know, it's in the mind, Richard. It's not difficult. We do it all the time. We raise money. The private social, however you termed it, we raise money every Sunday. Every Sunday, large sums of money. Saturday, Sunday, Wednesday, large sums of money is raised in these churches, temples, and mosques. Large sums of money that can change the dynamic of areas if you have a strategy how you're going to approach it. Large sums of money are already raised. We're already doing these things. It's the mind that has to be changed. It's not like we can't, we got to start from scratch. We got to build. The wheel is that we don't have to reinvent the wheel. We got several wheels going on in all these different cities. All we got to do is remove the people, or remove the stumbling blocks, and it's always people. And our people with another mindset. You know, we talked Friday, and I want to read this article too, by Brother Klingman, James Klingman of 1 Million Conscious Black Voters. He wrote an article, Selling Out or Buying In. I just want to read a couple paragraphs to dovetail on the subject that we talked about Friday, when we talked about the the football player for the Philadelphia Eagles that touted himself as the leader of the coalition of black players that went and approached the NFL. Come to find out that he was nothing but a collaborator, and a lot of players was upset because he made a private deal. They all agreed that they wouldn't talk to these white owners by themselves, and they would approach them as a unit. Come to find out he was making a side deal as an individual, and then come out with a edict that they made an agreement that they wouldn't protest anymore, and that he's not going to protest from this point forward. Although the players didn't even consider him as a protester, because they said he never took a knee. All he was doing was putting a glove on and raising his fist. So, you know, the issue of the collaborator. Now, I want to read this article because Brother Klingman touches on it in his first two paragraphs. Selling Out or Buying In by James Klingman. It says, during the enslavement period of African Americans in America, during the enslavement period of Africans in America, the Meritorious Manumission Act of 1710 was enacted in Virginia. It was the legal act of freeing a slave for good deeds, as defined by the national public policy, and could be granted to a slave who saved the life of his white master or saved his property. Invented something from which a slave could make profit or snitch on a fellow slave who was planning a slave rebellion or planning to run away. Let's assume that's where the term selling out came from. 300 years later, black folks are still dealing with sellouts. But I think we should take a different look at this issue. Selling out is a very negative term, especially among black folks. But for those who sell out, it seems to be a very profitable term. Some of our prominent black spokespersons are very well off financially because they've sold out. They started out as strong black advocates and activists, and now they are nothing more than sycophants with various causes, political parties, businesses, and politicians. I've often been told that everyone has a number, a price that they would accept to sell out. I wonder what the number was for Marcus Garvey. I wonder if he even had a number. When I listen to his speeches and read his papers, I doubt it. Also, I think about MLK and how much it would have taken for him to sell out, although many do have a special number, a price for which they would sell out. They have been and still are some who did not and seemingly would not sell out no matter what. You know, I just read those first couple of paragraphs from his article because we can see clearly that it's a lot of our ancestors that didn't do that.
Right.
But some of our ancestors did participate in that. And that is dangerous. Like I mentioned on Friday, I think that's worse than Europe. At least you know where Europeans are standing. But when you have a collaborator and a sellout among your ranks, that's dangerous. They can cause people to lose their life, cause serious harm among our brothers and sisters. Those people have to be rooted out. They have to be. They have to be exposed, and we have to come up with ways to deal with them. Because heretofore, Richard, we haven't come up with ways to deal with these collaborators. Some of them sell out the community and then move right back into the community, right back among black folks that they worked against all their life. It's got to be ways that we can come up to deal with collaborators. You know, South Africa, when they were struggling for independence during their apartheid, they came up with a way to deal with collaborators. Mm. You know what that was.
Oh, yeah. Them rings.
Yeah.
Them ties.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm not advocating that on the air. I'm not advocating that. But we got to come up with some ways because these collaborators are dangerous. Even on the level of this NFL situation. Because with this guy, this Malcolm Jenkins making this agreement and then white media touting it as the players reaching agreement, other players said that they wasn't going to stop their protests. So that automatically makes them vulnerable, Richard.
Mm.
It makes them vulnerable. It exposes them. Where before, they forced these white owners and the NFL or whatever to the table, at least to hear some of the things that the guys were talking about. Even though they claim that Jenkins was one of the ones that didn't want Colin Kaepernick present. Because I guess he had in mind he wanted to make his own deal, him and his Papa John's franchise that he has. But I'm just saying, that alone exposes other players that said that they're not going to stop their protests. That immediately exposes them.
It definitely exposed that whole process to us. The audience who are watching them, or the ones who are learning from this, or who have to ask the question, what side am I on? But you know, Elliot, out of this week, because I kind of always look at it as three elements, right? It's those of us who are, I would say, African-centered to the point we want sovereignty and self-governing, and we want to be able to have a prosperous life. There's those who want to reform or as you say, collaborate, you know, or to accept white supremacy in the system as it is. And then it's those in the middle. And it's that middle group, Elliot, that concerns me, because out of that group, we need organizers and people to assist in creating, even for themselves, well-being, but to support the notion that it's to our best interest to build for ourselves. But what you see is the ones who are collaborating seems to, and with the support of the system, the media system and all that, and you gave examples of the, you know, the laughing and joking, they support them, and that middle group sways sometimes more towards that end. Why do I say this? This week, I think for me, it was this week. You know, this whole thing with the European monarch, Charles, Prince, right? And this here female, Markle, I think is her last name. I heard so many people talking about how, now, I don't know if she proclaimed herself Black, but
she didn't proclaim herself as Black, but go ahead.
Yeah, you know, and that, you know, that's the thing, because it's Black women, a number of them, who think this is so wonderful, right? That this Black woman, and we heard this before, right? And that became out of a president, but this Black woman is getting ready to marry this white monarch, who is the monarch of a system that not only benefit from slavery, but actually not benefit just from the products that was being sold or the drug, sugar, right? The sugar cane, the sugar that was being cultivated on those plantations in the Caribbean and to feed their addiction, but benefited in creating the wealth from that, but also benefit from actually in the actual capturing and dehumanizing of African people. But that middle group is celebrating that. But you know, the thing that got me, Elliot, no one said anything about the prince that married from the prince from Ethiopia who married a woman from New Jersey, a Black woman from New Jersey. I didn't hear the press deal with it. I didn't hear Black people talk about it in general. I'm just talking about in general conversation, you know, and it, to me, that shows how much vested, when you say it's in the mind, how much vested this system has captured so many Black people's value to support something that is not of their, to their own interest, to where a collaborator, using that individual from this from the sports team, that he feel, just, you know, forget what the intent was of dealing with social justice and police brutality as it affect Black men, which he is, that he's willing to even shun even the support of his teammates, even if they're not on his particular team, to benefit for himself. It's mind-boggling to me.
We're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, the floor is open today on Sunday, which is rare. We usually have a guest, but we're in open forum this evening. You can give us a call and participate in the conversation. We do have some calls on hold. We'll get to them after the break, but you can be involved in the conversation too by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. Time for an Awakening. We'll be right back.
Listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency and business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
You have the emergence in human society of this thing that's called the state. What is the state? The state is this organized bureaucracy. It is the police department. It is the army, the navy. It is the prison system, the courts, and what have you. This is the state. It is a repressive organization. But the state, and you, well, you know, you've got to have the police, because if there were no police, look at what you'd be doing to yourself.
You know how we think. Organize the hood under our Ching banners. Red, black, and green instead of gang bandanas. FBI spying on us through the radio antennas. And them hitting cameras in the streetlight watching society. With no respect for the people's right to privacy. I take a slug for the cause like Huey P. While all you fake niggas try to copy Master P. I wanna be free to live. Able to have what I need to live. Bring the power back to the street where the people live. We sick of working for crumbs and filling up the prisons. Dying over money and relying on religion for help. We do for self like ants in a colony. Organize the wealth into a socialist economy. A way of life based off the common needs. And all my comrades is ready. We just spreading the seed.
Live a third of his life in a jail cell. Cause the world is controlled by the white male. And the people don't never get justice. And the women don't never get respected. And the problems don't never get solved. And the jobs don't never pay enough. So the rent always be late. Can you relate?
No more bondage, no more political monsters, no more secret space launches. Government departments started it in the projects, material objects, thousands up in the closets. Could have been invested in the future for my comrades. Battle contacts, primitive weapons out in combat. Many never come back, pretty niggas be running with gas. Rather get shot in they back than fire back. We're tired of that. Corporations hiring blacks, denying the facts, exploiting us all over the map. That's why I write the shit I write in my raps. It's documented, I mean it. Every day of the week, I live in it, breathing it. It's more than just fucking believing it. I'm holding in ones, rolling up my sleeves and shit. It's C-Lo for push-ups now. Many headed for one conclusion. Niggas ain't ready for revolution.
Your average black male, live a third of his life in a jail cell. Cause the world is controlled by the white male. And the people don't never get justice. And the women don't never get respect.
yet, and the problems don't never get solved, and the jobs don't never pay enough, so the rent always be late. Can you relate? We living in a police state.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. We're in open forum this evening. No guest scheduled. Well, it was guest scheduled, but we had to kind of reschedule things and shift things around. So the floor is yours this evening, and you can get involved in the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. You know, we got several callers on hold, Richard. Before I go to them, I just want to read briefly from this published report. The CBC members met with FBI Director Christopher Wray. They had already met with Sessions in that open congressional hearing. He couldn't answer no questions or act like he didn't know what the heck was going on. So they met with the FBI director. In reference to this, well, I'll read the title of the article. CBC members meet with FBI Director Christopher Wray about the FBI's controversial Black Identity Extremist report. This is what they learned. By Stacey Brown of the NNPA Newswire. FBI Director Christopher Wray failed to explain why the agency he leads changed the name of the domestic terrorism designation from Black Separatist Extremists to Black Identity Extremists during a recent meeting with the group of Congressional Black Caucus members about the leaked FBI document. Wray also refused to acknowledge that Black activists, including Black Lives Matter organizers, are being monitored by the FBI, according to the CBC members present at the meeting. The leaked FBI document titled Black Identity Extremists, likely motivated to target law enforcement officers, sparked a wave of controversy and sharp criticism of the FBI. At least one CBC member called the leaked document COINTELPRO 2.0, while others said that the report calls for open season on Black activists. The document was widely shared with local law enforcement agencies across the country. According to Newsweek, the following fatal attacks on police officers in Dallas and Baton Rouge, Louisiana in 2016, the Bureau expressed concerns about the threat of copycat attacks against law enforcement at the Republican and Democratic National Conventions. On Wednesday, November 29th, Congressional Black Caucus Chair Cedric Richmond of Louisiana, the second chair Karen Bast of California, provided an overview of their meeting with Wray in a teleconference with and National Newspaper Publishers Association, NNPA President Ben Chavis, and NNPA National Chairwoman Dorothy Lavelle, and a group of Black publishers and editors and reporters. The CBC members, who were also members of the House Committee on Homeland Security and House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence, and the House Committee of the Judiciary were present at the meeting. Wray said that no one would be investigated or targeted unless they met 3 points of criteria. There had to be a credible evidence of federal crimes, a credible threat of force or violence, and both of those points had to exist in furtherance of a social or a political goal. Bass said that the FBI uses that criteria to categorize Black people as domestic terrorists, and according to the leaked document, Black identity extremists fall into the category of domestic terrorism. Bass said that based on what she heard from Wray, the methodology seemed flimsy. When we raise our concerns that a new generation of Black activists are being targeted, including Black Lives Matter movement, for surveillance and harassment, Wade said repeatedly, there is no investigation of Black Lives Matter movement, said Bass. Bass and the other CBC members let Wade know that they were completely aware that some activists in their communities were experiencing surveillance and harassment, even though they didn't meet the requirements that Wade described that would lead to an investigation. The FBI denies they are surveilling our groups like Black Lives Matter movement, but we told them we don't believe it, and our information tells us that the groups are under surveillance, says Richmond. Richmond said that the CBC members plan to present information to the FBI detailing surveillance and harassment of black organizers. The FBI director expressed interest in meeting with CBC members regularly because we are the eyes and ears on the ground, and the CBC offers a diversity that the agency lacks, says Richmond. Bass asked the black press to put a call out to their readers to let lawmakers know if they have experienced harassment or surveillance, a request that Richmond echoed. Ben Chavis, president and CEO of NNPA, committed to work with Richmond and other CBC members to uncover stories of unwarranted government surveillance and harassment of the black community. So we see here that after they met with Sessions, we played that clip on the air when he claimed that he had Alzheimer's or whatever. He didn't know anything. We see that they don't really get any answers from this Christopher Way. So this document just came out of the clear blue sky, according to him. He don't know anything. Nobody's being surveilled. Some of the CBC members said that they know this people under surveillance. So notice his response to the CBC members. And I'll read this again because it's a old response that white folks, they haven't changed how they deal with our people. You know, I read that meritorious manumission law in 1710 of how they wanted to deal with our people, offering them money to tell on other blacks. Notice what Wade tells the CBC members, and I'll read this again for the listening audience. Here it goes. The FBI director expressed interest in meeting with the CBC members regularly because we are the eyes and ears on the ground, and the CBC offers a diversity that the FBI lacks, said Richmond. What does that mean, Richard?
We want y'all to do the work of letting us know who we should be going after.
Wow. Wow. These spots, they don't change their spots. I don't know how people can't read these people like you. Come on here. Our people are not stupid. We give this man, this European, benefit of the doubt, man. His methods don't change. It don't change. He basically offered them to rat on the community. Oh, let us know what's going on. You're our eyes and ears. Come on, man. Let me read that one more time if it went by the listening audience. The FBI denies. Oh, wait a minute. Hold it. I done lost my place here. Oh, well, wait a minute. I can't even find it, Richard.
You said it doesn't disturb you so much. Yeah, I mean, it's like you said,
here it is. I'm sorry. It says the FBI director expressed interest in meeting with the CBC members regularly. We are his eyes and ears on the ground, and the CBC members offer diversity that the FBI lacks, says Richmond. Wow.
And I think I read the two pieces that I picked up out of it was, and I don't think it was in that particular, but that they asked them, well, if it's not, well, first he said this was something that was done before he got there. So it wasn't something that he authorized. And
that might have been the only truth he might have told, because that COINTELPRO has been going on since before he got there.
Yeah. And two was, they said, well, then since you didn't authorize it, have it removed, change it. I mean, take it out, because the police departments, that went out to all the police departments and they will respond based off of that policy initiative. So if it's something that you don't agree with, then send something else out that covers up or changes what that states. And he, if my recollection is right, he said he couldn't do that.
You know, they had the quote unquote three criterias here, that the evidence of a federal crime, evidence of somebody committed federal crime or have felonies, a credible threat of violence, or both, had to exist for them to furtherance of any type of investigation. And the way this system is, with some of our youngest people are getting felonies on their record, all this stuff lends to, with that criteria, every black person can be surveilled. Or the majority of black people. Let's start, because these calls are backing up. Let me get to some of these calls. Let's go to Newport News. Brother, you on the air? You on the air? Okay, let's go to the next call. Let's go to 267. 267. 267. You got a lot of noise in the background. I don't think 267 is ready. Let's go to another call. Let's go to Colorado Springs. Brother?
Hey, Brother Elliot, Richard. How y'all doing?
How you feeling?
Good, good. How you feeling?
Yeah, I'm good. Hey, just real quick, I don't have a lot of time. I'm cooking dinner, but that report you just read, man, that's crazy, because basically all he did was threw out a bait. He trying to see who going to bite. And the sad thing is,
wait a minute. Say that again, Ramon.
I said the sad thing is somebody's going to bite.
Yeah, well, wait, Ramon, hold it. And I'm glad that you mentioned that. Wait a minute. Now, I'll use a parallel to this, and I hate using these sports analogies. I'll use a parallel to this NFL and how they dealt with black players that met. Now, evidently, they threw out some bait because this clown Jenkins decided to meet with them by himself. They threw out bait and somebody bit. See, white folks don't, just like I said, they don't change how they dealing with us. This guy threw out open bait at that meeting. Now, how much you want to bet that somebody don't bite? Somebody gonna bite.
They're gonna do it.
And when somebody bites, see, that's what I'm talking about this evening. If somebody bites, then we need to start developing ways to deal with these damn collaborators, man. This don't make any sense, man. We got to come up with ways that we're going to deal with these collaborators.
Well, see, Elliot, that's what we were talking about last week with the John Conyers, you know, with the sexual assault attack from the white women. I think some of the self-respecting black folk about to get put up out of there. You know what I'm saying? If he's one of them, I think they're just weeding them out and they're using people. You know, they're using the last of what remains of what could have been made some type of political front that never was. From what we can see, I mean, the latest thing that Maxine Waters been talking about is okay, and you know, seeing goodness and bombing in one direction, and you know what I'm saying, not bombing over here like it's supposed to be some different when it all goes back to Africa. You know, you got what's that brother's name from AIPAC, you know, and all these people who support all this different madness with Israel and all of that stuff that's causing all that destabilization over there in Libya, Yemen. You know, these are the exact people on CNN every day. I'm trying to think of that brother's name. He comes on, not Van Jones. He's one of the other brothers that they always bring on there that cry a lot and do that madness and that dance. But I think that's just all they're doing, Ellis. They're fishing it, and they're going to get somebody to bite. Thank you, guys. I'm going to mute my line.
Okay, now. Let's go back to Newport News. He might be at the phone. Let's go to Newport News.
Hello, brothers. Can you hear me?
I hear you now.
Hey, look, I want to hit on a couple of things, and I appreciate what you do, and you're so professional and on point. AFRICON, from a couple of weeks ago, when I told you about dealing with the brother that's into the naked yoga. AFRICON, I put up something in the sidebar so you can check later.
Okay.
Explaining from Larry Richardson, who is about 35 miles up the road from where I am in Yorktown, Virginia, who was the assistant to Colin Powell that explained exactly why a four-star general was put in charge of Africa back when Colin Powell was pushing the Iran deal with the weapons of mass destruction. So I'm going to go on to explain to you exactly what he went on. He talked about natural resources and the control of Africa and why the U.S. has troops there without telling the public about it. And you and I both know it's not for the benefit of Africans. So the other thing is understanding that black people in this country do not understand. You cannot divorce yourself from politics because politics is how your taxpayers' money is funneled back to you. So there's no such thing as getting something for free. It's about reciprocity. I put in, therefore I deserve it. It's not an entitlement. It's something I have earned. And the other thing is, when you talked about earlier about conspirators and people, the me generation does not understand. In this lifetime, and based on what black people have gone through, I, as a 64-year-old black man, cannot expect to reap benefits from what I sow. I have to plant those seeds so those who come after me can prosper.
Okay.
I yield the floor.
Brother Otis, thank you for your contribution as always. Let's go to the BTR. Is BTR?
Greetings, brothers, can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
Is this the How president? You doing, man? Is this the president? I think this is the president.
Oh, okay.
No. Oh, yeah. What's up, fellas? Elliot sound like he want to string a brother up.
You didn't know if you should take that title, right?
Man, let's go after him. Hey, but listen, though, Elliot, I feel your passion on that. But the truth is, man, it's not this guy by himself. You know, it's different players who've been trying to work on this issue. So let me just share this quick report with you. It says the NFL player representatives and league officials reached an agreement. This was Wednesday night. So This was, what, not that long ago, for the league to provide financial support to players' community activism endeavors, according to a person familiar with the deliberations. The tentative agreement, so, you know, nothing's been signed, nothing is concrete. The tentative agreement does not directly address the ongoing protest by NFL players during the national anthem. Multiple people familiar close to the situation said earlier in the evening. So what that meant was them stopping their protest wasn't even on the table. Because, see, they can't control every individual NFL player and what they do. So nobody can make an agreement like that. So according to this, this is coming to you from the Chicago Tribune. They're saying they ain't even discussed whether or not they're going to stop us, you know, these protests or whatnot. Now, it says the owners have been hopeful that the agreement with the players on activism will lead all players to voluntarily stand for the anthem. But divisions on the player side of the issue that became evident earlier Wednesday potentially could lead to the protests continuing, even if the deal on activism is in place. I'm going to be real with you. I hope this deal do go through. Now, we could talk about they need to put more money in the pot when we talk about all these billionaires. What is it, 32 of them? You know, You got all these billionaires and all y'all coughing up is what, 900 million to 100 million. Now, then it's on the player's responsibility. So that says to me, the player, just like how some of them pick, and we talked about it before in Black Radio, how these agents direct black people where to put their money to or get them to go out here and do what they call charity work, raising money, going to events for like, what's the one for the cancer? That's why they play pink, wear the little pink cleats or the towels for an entire month to raise awareness about breast cancer and stuff like that. It's another one. I can't think of the name, man. It's like National you see them doing, all the players doing commercials for them. And then they got that Players 360. They teach the kids how to activism, get outside and exercise for an hour a day. But so, you know, this could be like grassroots money. You know what I'm saying? If they want to get their money to, quote unquote, Black Lives Matter or local grassroots organizations that's already out there working on the issues, because let's be real, brothers. Our community don't have a lot of money to begin with. I know we have token wealth among a few of us, you know, and these athletes are some of them. But we as a people don't have a whole lot of money to support our grassroots activities. Just like the work that I do with Black Talk Media Project. We don't have a whole lot of donations, man. We could debate that all day long. So what I'm trying to say is people do need money. And I'd rather take money from an NFL player who want to give it to Black Talk Media Project to, let's say, launch radio projects for the urban community in whatever city they playing in. I feel better taking money from them and talking about these social issues, or if it's whatever, you know, program that these nonprofits or grassroots come up with as a solution, however they're trying to solve the problem. We need this money, man. I mean, not say we need it, but we could use it. I mean, that's like some art of war stuff where you could use your enemy resources. And so, you know, again, these other players, they ain't got to stop on their knee. But let's also be real. Them taking the knee during the national anthem, like Colin Kaepernick said, that was about raising awareness. Where awareness been raised. And if taking the knee, brothers, y'all know that ain't going to stop the modern-day slavery and human trafficking. That's about the same as hands up, don't shoot out there. You know what I'm saying? How crazy that sound. Oh, we putting our hands up for our enemies to shoot us. You know what I'm saying? So I don't mean to go off on a tangent on that.
But keep in mind, Scotty, that they're not –
But I'm not gonna call them sellouts, man.
Well, no, I'm gonna just lay it out there. They are
go that far.
Him and his Papa John's franchise.
In the right place.
Him and his Papa John's franchise. Listen, he and wait a minute. I didn't call him his own Eric Reed. And I forgot
Michael Bennett or any of them. It doesn't matter, man. Whether they want to take the money and direct it to grassroots.
Yeah, but see that's the thing. They're not gonna direct it to no grassroots. For example. Black Lives Matter is considered a black extremist organization or black identity or whatever that label, COINTELPRO. That's one of the ones on their list, even though Sessions and this Christopher Wade deny it. So you got these white Republican owners of these football teams. Do you really think that they're going to give some money so black players can give it to Black Lives Matter? Come on. No. They're going to give it to the Urban League, the NAACP, and some Negroes in the Negro College
pay the
Fund.
Players, Elliot.
And they're going to pay the ones.
Outreach to these players as I hate to use this term, the so-called conscious community, because most of the time we bashing these players for playing the game, going to their job and doing their job in a talent, using a talent that apparently white people willing to pay to see. And we too, we watch sports, we pay for sports and all that. But how is that any different than if I'm going into a factory for the Ford Motor Company? That's a white corporation. That's helped building up their wealth.
Well, I don't think people bash them for playing a sport. I think people bash them when they get the money and funnel it towards white agents or white people surrounding them, chasing after white women like they can't. They ain't never seen no woman, beautiful black women. They got to chase every white woman. Some of them is ugly as hell. They chasing after all these white women, giving them all their money, like Charles Barkley. That fat, ugly white woman he had, you got to be kidding.
It's not, you know, that's not the norm, though. That's the height media.
That's the height. Hey, listen, I would contend that the majority of these black athletes in basketball, football, and others got white women.
Okay, but, you know, that's not the majority of black people, and I really don't care who they sleeping with and all that. At the end of the day, you know, it comes down to abolitionism. Either you are for slavery or you against slavery, because there's plenty of black people like the Obamas. You know, that's a black family right there, and look at all the damage that they do.
Oh, I totally agree. You're right.
What I'm saying? So I don't want to put it on nobody being married to a white person, but the norm is the majority of black people married within their group. That's every group. You know, but I'm not going to point at them people like they the problem. No, it's these white supremacist slavers.
I mean, we agree there.
Trying to figure it out just like the rest of us, okay? And they want to direct some money to Black Talk Media Project. Scotty will show take that money and put it to good use. Now, I ain't telling them to give it to Black Lives Matter. You know what I'm saying? This is saying they get to choose who they give it to.
Well,
so we'll try to
news flat.
That's the thing that's being, as I hear it, that's really in question, because if I'm hearing it correctly, they as a group haven't decided yet. Yeah, they have been split.
I'm saying, Richard, it's still early in this for me to start saying, you know, which way it's going to go.
Well, I think it's a good microcosm, or, you know, I look for y'all to correct me if I'm wrong, but it's a microcosm of the black community in general, especially when we're talking about the wealth, because here is it that they were supposed to go in as a group and now and be offered, well, by this white, as you say, the white billionaire club. And they said, well, we'll put some money on the table. But before they even get there, there's a split within the group. Who's going to do the talking?
Richard, wouldn't you agree? So again, this just come out. It's an initial offer. This is a long debating process at the end of the day. But I just, you know, I can't buy into attacking these brothers, man, and calling them collaborators, because they're not taking no money for themselves. They trying to get money for grassroots activism that's targeting these issues. These brothers ain't got time to be out in the street like the Black Panther Party. We need money to do all that.
You're giving them too much benefit. Some of these guys taking money for themselves, like that Malcolm Jenkins in his Papa John's franchise.
But isn't that really the issue, though?
So what do we want them
individual,
to do?
That individual is the one that's actually now become that. What if I heard the two reports that I heard from y'all is that this one individual now becomes the spokesperson.
This is
what the other individual said, well, you wasn't supposed to be the spokesperson. We were supposed to be going in together. They shouldn't be talking to you. They should be talking to us. But they're
talking to him for a reason.
I mean, that's where the
groups here. It's really two different groups from what I'm
okay.
It just split off into two different groups.
A players coalition that is led by Philadelphia Eagles safety Malcolm Jenkins and former NFL wide receiver Anquan Boldin. So this is, he's not even in the league.
I know, he's retired.
Then you had Eric Reed and Michael Thomas announced that they were withdrawing from the Players Coalition, citing differences with Jenkins and Boldin about the discussions with the league, how they were proceeding. So that, you know, again, I don't know what the beef is. I don't know what it is, but I'm not trying to call Malcolm Jenkins or Anquan Boldin or none of these players some collaborators with the enemy or something like
that. Well, Eric Reed called him that. And I agree with him.
Mr. Fuller and what's her name, Dr. Welsing, about black love and this name calling each other and all of that. That's not showing black self-respect. That's not showing respect for other
people. Hey, listen, collaborators ain't showing black self-respect. When our people freed themselves in Haiti, wait a minute. When our people freed themselves in Haiti, McIndall was the one that said we got to deal with these collaborators. It's the same thing now. I want you to understand, Scotty, if we're talking about freedom for our people and freedom from white supremacy, we got to deal with the issue of collaborators. It's real.
Well, we do got to deal with that, but I'm trying to tell you some NFL players trying to get some money out the NFL for some grassroots
organization. They ain't trying to get – well, that's where we differ. Some of them ain't trying to get no money for no grassroots organization.
That's what they say they doing. I don't know, Elliot, if you got some different information or some press release or some inside information.
I got the inside.
I'm saying Malcolm Jenkins and them ain't helping catching no slaves out here.
I got the inside.
Black cops. They ain't on no working in no prison plantation, helping to keep all these black people on lockdown. They ain't raping nobody. They ain't out there beating up our people. So what are you saying, accusing them of doing? That's what I'm saying, bro. I think you're taking it to the extreme.
No, I'm not.
This is a good segue, though, Elliot, to extremism. This is what I originally wanted to call in.
Go ahead.
Now, we got these black people at the CBC, Congressional Black Caucus, whatever. These people got stabbed. They get good money, probably six figures to do all the research and stuff, because I don't expect one person to know everything. You know, that's why they have congressional staffs, each Congress member has. Now, I like some of the questions and historical reference from some other interviewer, that guy that they was interviewing from the FBI on this so-called BIE report, but I did not hear no question. Well, they asked the question, some of the CBC members said, is there a coexisting white report? Well, see, I put that on them for not knowing about the 2006 FBI report on white supremacists infiltrating all levels of the police department. Now, the FBI put this out. This was during the Bush administration. This was a Republican administration, but they said that law enforcement, which we get for us, for black people, we know this to be historical truth. It happened, you know, if you read Brother Robert F. Williams' book, Negroes with Guns, it mentions in there how the police was with the Klan, rolled up on that doctor's house one night, and they had to fire on the police. The black guard had to fire on the police and chase them off as well. So we've always known the Klan or the police department. You know, I don't even separate the two really. But, you know, historically, even as they existed as one, as a terrorist organization defined as such by the federal government, and then you got police department working with these terrorists. So the FBI report said in 2006 that white supremacists called ghost skins, these the ones that don't get the tattoos, they don't look like bikers, they don't come to work with a Confederate flag t-shirt, you know, they totally hide themselves behind them suit and ties. Now, in the 2006 report said you got ghost skins, and then they had names, but they blacked the names out of people, high profile people in law enforcement, in different levels of law enforcement. You don't even tell us who these people are, and you telling them, how come the CBC didn't ask them about that? What have y'all done to clear out these white supremacist ghost skins that you named in your 2006 report?
They haven't done anything to clear him out. Heard Sessions say that he ain't even aware. I don't know what you're talking about. Listen here.
She did ask them about them.
And another thing, and, Scotty. Oh, excuse me.
I didn't see where they asked where, but they, the representative from California, she did ask Sessions, Boldegard, you know, and that's when he, you know, got his little Alzheimer's incident that went on. You know, his eyes rolled up in his head, but I think, Scotty, that you are also raising a powerful point from the point of pursuing that, because I don't think that they presented that to us in general, what that report is. I think we read it about the police being infiltrated, but this here ghost group, I haven't seen anything. You know, that don't mean anything that I haven't seen it, but I haven't seen that been publicized by the political establishment from that perspective. So I think that is valid, that they could have raised it, or they could have been communicating to the community that these people exist and that they are in the police department.
You know, and Scotty raised a good point, because, you know, I wouldn't expect the FBI would ever to release to black public that these people are a danger to them. The CBC, just like Scotty put together, you know, just right off the bat, rolled off some of these incidents and some of these groups. The CBC got staff and everything else. They can put together reports of an imminent danger to black people. That's what those clowns are supposed to be doing. They're supposed to be representing us. Put together some reports of some of this imminent danger and distribute it among some of these do-nothing Congress people, so they can come back to the, like we got a do-nothing Congress person here in Philadelphia that it would alternative, well, I ain't going to deal with that. He can come back here and have some sessions, go in these churches. He's in the churches running his mouth any other time. Go in these churches and have these reports read instead of them hollering and screaming about giving being saved on the other side. They can save their children here. Have these reports read in the churches. Have the reports read in social groups. Have community groups talk about these reports. Make up some reports with their staff. If some reports was read, maybe that old white devil wouldn't have went in that church down there in South Carolina and shot up 9 innocent people that was in there praying. If they had some reports made, maybe they wouldn't have been aware. And when they seen this guy walking through the door, say, hey, man, listen, you're not a member here. What do you want? Get out of here. They could have dealt with him at the door instead of letting him come in there and sit in that congregation and then pull out a gun and murder 9 innocent people. Some of these representatives need to stop waiting for white people to put these reports out and use their staff, get their staff up instead of their staff planning for the next CBC convention dinner where they drink and smoke and sleep with women and all this other stuff, have the biggest party, and what the hell they got the party about. Make some reports up and distribute it to some of their constituents so we can be aware of what we're dealing with. Do that. They're giving these people no benefit of no doubt. Some of these people are charlatans and collaborators. That's the facts of it. Let me go to the next call here. Get some more. You know what? Let's take a brief break, Richard. Richard, you still there?
I'm still here.
Let me take a brief break here, and then we come back. We can continue. We could go with the callers online, and people can get involved. Maybe I'm wrong. Scotty said that I'm wrong. Yeah, I'm a little too hard on him. Listen. The listening audience could tell me.
You do come down on them brothers a little bit.
Well, if somebody, we're in a serious situation, Richard. This is serious. This is life and death for our people. This is serious. So, you know, come on. Callers get involved by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. Open forum. Talk to you.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
Overworked? Suffering with an underperforming company, headache customer, staff, or vendors? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? We turned a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in 3 states. This is just one transformation created for entrepreneurs like you in various industries around the country. Not what you're used to from accounting and business consulting? Well, welcome to New Business Solutions. If you're ready to go beyond advising, coaching, and training and get implemented results, call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions apply the best comprehensive administrative, accounting, operations, human resources, management, sales, and marketing to help you actualize your vision for yourself and your company. From anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072, spelled new as in numerous, on your device right now. Book your free consultation at newbusinesssolutions.com.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
My reason for believing in extremism, intelligently directed extremism, extremism in defense of liberty, extremism in quest of justice, is because I firmly believe in my heart that the day that the black man takes an uncompromising step and realizes that he's within his rights when his own freedom is being jeopardized to use any means necessary to bring about his freedom or put a halt to that injustice, I don't think he'll be by himself. I live in America where there are only 22 million blacks against probably 160 million whites. One of the reasons that I'm in no way reluctant or hesitant to do whatever is necessary to see that black people do something to protect themselves, I honestly believe that the day that they do, many whites will have more respect for them, and that there will be more whites on their side than are now on their side with these little wishy-washy love thy enemy quotes that they've been using up to now. And if I'm wrong, then you are racialist. Point out, I'm also an American Negro, and I live in a society whose social system is based upon the castration of the black man, whose political system is based on castration of the black man, and whose economy is based upon the castration of the black man. A society which in 1964 has more subtle, deceptive, deceitful methods to make the rest of the world think that it's cleaning up its house, while at the same time, the same things are happening to us in 1964 that happened in 1954, 1924, and in 1984. They came up with what they call a civil rights bill in 1964, supposedly to solve our problem, and after the bill was signed, three civil rights workers were murdered in cold blood. And the FBI head, Hoover, admits that they know who did it. They've known ever since it happened, and they've done nothing about it. Civil rights bill down the drain. No matter how many bills pass, black people in that country, where I'm from, still our lives are not worth 2 cents. And the government has shown its inability, or either its unwillingness, to do whatever is necessary to protect life and property where the black American is concerned. So my contention is that whenever a people come to the conclusion that the government which they have supported proves itself unwilling or proves itself unable to protect our lives and protect our property because we have the wrong color skin, we are not human beings unless we ourselves band together and do whatever, however, whenever is necessary to see that our lives and our property is protected. And I doubt that any person in here would refuse to do the same thing were he in the same position. Or I should say, were he in the same condition. One step farther to see, am I justified in this stand? And I say, I'm not speaking. I'm speaking as a black man from America, which is in racist society. No matter how much you hear it talk about democracy, it's as racist as South Africa, or as racist as Portugal, or as racist as any other racialist society on this earth. The only difference between it and South Africa preaches separation and practices separation. America preaches integration and practices segregation. This is the only difference. They don't practice what they preach. Whereas South Africa preaches and practices the same thing. I have more respect for a man who lets me know where he stands, even if he's wrong, than the one who comes up like an angel and is nothing but a devil.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening with your hosts, Brother Elliot. Sundays, 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening, and we're in open forum this evening. We had to kind of reshuffle around the guests that we were supposed to have, but it's no problem because the listening audience is the guest tonight. You can get involved in the conversation too by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. Let's go to 267. 267.
Hey, good evening, Elliot. Good evening, Richard.
Hey, bro. How you doing?
All right, man. I just got finished listening to you and, you know, Scotty. And, you know, when you brought up the situation about the CDC going to meet with the FBI,
mm-hmm.
I think we have to really understand who the CDC work for. They work for the United States government. So they weren't going there for our benefit, like we always been thinking. So you talk about collaborators. They're some of the biggest collaborators that ever hit planet Earth, these so-called elected officials. I mean, you just got to see their track record. As we elect more of them, our situation gets worse. So, you know, we got to come out of that mindset that these people are going to. They're going there exactly what you said they're going there for, Elliot, to collect some money. I mean, that's their job. And matter of fact, I believe some of these religious leaders, that's their job also, to keep an eye on us. That's why they take the 501c3. So, you know, we got to come out of that mindset that these elected officials are in there looking out for us. You know, because you brought up a situation a couple of weeks ago, Elliot, about these so-called nasty, filthy, stop-and-go so-called restaurants that sell malt liquor and things like that in our neighborhoods. Now, if our so-called elected officials were looking out for us, those things would have never existed in the first place, because most of them operate with no license. And like you said, there is a certain city charter that states that these places are supposed to be closed at 11 o'clock, which me and you know, they stay open to 2, 3 in the morning. So these people are not there for our interest, man. And we have to change. You said we need a new, we have to have a new mindset. We do. We really do. If we think these elected politicians are there serving our purpose, I don't care if they black, white, or whatever, they serve the government. That's who's paying them. So we have to, like, grasp that. If we, first thing first, we gotta know they're not there working for us. I mean, as long as we think they do, they got us. As long as we think that man in a suit every week that gives us a bunch of garbage and puts a bunch of garbage in our heads about look forward to life eternally instead of staying in today and doing something about the day, that we got a problem, man. So we have to change our mindset. Now, I disagree with Scotty, respectively, because I listened to another talk show host, and he uses that same daggone argument. The white supremacists, they're laughing at us because, you know, we're attacking black people. But, you know, come on, man. If these black people are there working against us, I mean, what does that make them? An enemy is an enemy. I don't care if he's your skin color or not. You know, an enemy is an enemy. But, you know, you got these people, because they go after, and, you know, I'm not going to say nothing against the person they always base this off of, but I disagree with a lot of stuff she said. You know what I mean? And I'm just speaking for me. I disagree with so much stuff. I got her book. I listened to her a lot of times. I disagree with the person that taught her. I disagree with a lot of stuff they said. So, but I can't say that, you know, bless her soul, you know, may she rest in peace. But when you have a open enemy, like a Barkley. Well, I'm supposed to say, oh, that's my brother. I can't say nothing. You know, I mean, come on. I mean, am I wrong for having this kind of mindset? I mean, we got to think with some common sense here.
No, I don't think you're wrong. I watched the documentary 1804, and, you know, I knew about Dessalines, Bookman, and Toussaint Louverture, I didn't know much about Mackendall until it was expressed in the documentary. For any listening audience that haven't seen the documentary, 1804, try to get it. It's very interesting.
I got it about 2-3 weeks ago.
Okay, so
we've seen the damage that they did down there.
Well, you know what I mean? You've seen when Mackendall, that was one of his main things that he knew that before any type of rebellion can occur, that they had to get a hold and put a stop to collaborators. And he went about doing it. So, you know, if you're talking about freedom for our people, even during that period of the civil rights struggle, all during that period, man, it was, you seen people murdered, but it was collaborators involved in that. That Mississippi, what was the name of that, the sister that did that documentary had promised me several times that she'd be on. Mississippi Sovereignty Commission. When they released the names, they was redacted at one time, but when they released the names of all of these blacks down there that had took money to turn over evidence to white authorities, and some of the white authorities during that period of time would turn it over to them sheriffs or some of their brothers that was in the Klan or them themselves, and they would go and deal with them. I mean, the collaborators at that time was dangerous because people lost their lives directly from it. So we can't soft shoe and oh, don't call that man a name. And if a man's turned out to be a rat, then you got to do something about it. You can't have people like that in your organization. They do serious damage.
I think two things sparks in my mind because we, one, have to also still be careful from the point of, because unless you have the mechanism, we can call each other collaborators. And in general, we're always, all of us are collaborators as long as we're benefiting from the system. Because in general, if we didn't benefit, if we said today, the way we're going to stop our oppression and stop participating, then that means that we have pulled out and become separate from it, and we therefore rely on ourselves totally. That's one. And that, again, you know, it seems abstract to me. The other thing is that it has to be basis of some understanding. You can call them rules because we see in cases where people start saying, you a snitch and you didn't snitch only because of some other things that's going on between us. And this example with these ball players is a good one. They thought that they were going in there as a unit, right, and that they were going to go there and get present information and to take information away to make a decision as a unit. Now, at some point, that didn't happen. So the question comes, who is the one that we don't, by us not being there, we don't know amongst them, how did that break occur? But really,
you know, the players told you who did it.
Yeah. I mean,
the players told you who did it. The players said who did it.
And none of that money's going to go toward the Black Talk Media or nothing like that.
Oh, no, no.
That's just wishful thinking. You know what I mean? None of that money's going to go somewhere else that don't even involve us. That's already arranged. I mean, we have to stop thinking that these people are going to work. I saw a better idea for the players instead of taking money. I thought a better, say, like, look, set it up with the owners where you go into each of these towns that you take tax money from to build your stadiums and say, look, we have to set up a meeting with those so-called police and tell them stop shooting innocent people down in the streets and murder them. I think that would have been a better approach than just taking some money and then just say like that. That's all, you know.
I would think that the as an example, and I'm glad you raised alternative views, because remember these guys are entertainers. They're not negotiators. So if they would have, as a unit, or even a different unit, went to the social activists, created some understanding of what they were going before they went and talked.
Right.
Created some understanding of what they were going to try to get for those particular organizations, activities, social activities, then it would at least they would be using that leverage, but they wouldn't become the leadership because they're entertainers. And one thing that the system of white supremacy try to make the entertainers the leaders. They try to make the entertainers the organizers. And their role is to be entertainers. They can use their leverage and influence, but they should be able to have the communication with the organizers and the leaders. And they have example of an entertainer, Cabinet, who did two different things, or at least I'm using. He created his own outreach operation, and he showed what kind of social activities that you should be supporting. So, and that would negate the ones that the owners say that this is what y'all should support, or this is what I'm going to support with my money. Because then they'll be able to go in there as a unit and say, this, you want to negotiate with us, this is what you're going to support with your money. That at least takes it, creating the relationship between the community and the entertainers, compared to the entertainers thinking that they are the ones that are going to be doing something with the auspice of the owners. They're going to be doing something for the community. Like, we're going to do something for you lowly Negroes.
I just had to call in and let you know, I believe, and like you said, Richard, these guys are just entertainers. Most of them come from poor backgrounds, getting lots of money for the first time. Sometimes I think we are a little hard on the so-called athlete, because they come from the same back. And you are also right, Richard. At some point, we all are collaborating, unless we just stop paying taxes, stop working underneath this system, and just totally break free of it. You know what I mean? But so I think sometimes we are a little hard on these athletes. I do. So, but I'm talking about, we have to get out of the mindset that these so-called elected people are working in our best interest, which we have plenty of proof they're not. They're nothing but, that's where my focus goes. Those CBC, that's a dangerous thing right there. When they start meeting up with the FBI, hey, look, you got a civil rights guy that comes on public radio every day, got an FBI number, but people still look up to him like he's working in our best interest. And his only option for us to get out of what we got is to vote for the Democratic Party. So, if we can actually see through these people, we have a chance. But a lot of us have to get to a point where we got to see through these people and know what we're up against. And that is not a new program. That thing has been out. It's just that some of our so-called leaders or press want to blame everything on this fool in the White House right now. But a lot of these things were done underneath the Obama administration, man. The NDA and all of it. So we're being set up for something. I don't know what's coming down the pike, but we are being set up for something. So that's all I have to talk about tonight, man. I just had to call in and give my opinion. And we have to separate ourselves from the David Clarks, the Charles Barkleys, and all these people. We got to separate. We have to separate from them first if we want some justice. But as long as we buy into their nonsense, we're going to keep getting what we get. So that's all I had to call in and say, man.
All right. Have a good evening, man.
All right, take care.
Yeah, taking it. Let's go to 215. 215, Eric. 215.
Hey, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. How y'all doing?
Hey, bro.
How you doing now?
I'm doing fine. Our praises be to Allah. Brother Elliot, y'all was talking about the CBC thing about the FBI COINTELPRO. You mentioned Cedric Richmond. What was your statement? Because I didn't quite get the gist of what you were saying, Elliot. Refresh my memory.
What are you talking about? What the FBI director said to the CBC? Well, he didn't say it just to Cedric Richmond. He said it. He said it to the CBC members that were there.
Oh, okay.
Richmond just commented on it. You want me to read his comment?
Yeah. What do you think about Cedric Richmond's comments? That's what I mean. That's what I was trying to say in that respect.
No, I didn't say anything about his comment. He commented on what the. I'll read it to you. What the director told them at the meeting. In gist, the director basically denied any knowledge of this document. He just did a little bit better than Sessions.
Okay.
He claimed knowledge of it, and he gave criteria, but he didn't think that Black Lives Matter and all was on it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
The Black Caucus said that they know that they have been on it, or they are on it. So it says that this is what Richmond said about it says, Richmond said that the CBC members plan to present information to the FBI detailing surveillance and harassment of black organizers.
Okay, cool.
The FBI director expressed interest in meeting with the CBC on a regular basis because we are the eyes and ears on the ground, and the CBC offers a diversity that the FBI lacks, said Richmond. Mm-hmm. So the FBI offered to meet with them regularly because you're our eyes and ears. So, you know,
I don't like how that sounds.
Well, that's what I'm saying. See, you know, people don't want to call people collaborators and all. Listen here, and we want to use broad terms saying we all are collaborators. Listen, when I say collaborators, I'm talking about somebody working against the interests of black people and the black community. I ain't talking about somebody going to a job and working a 9-to-5. You know, no, I'm not. The collaborator is somebody in a position of power or influence that's working against the interests of black people. If I got to put a definition on it, that's the definition. My definition of a collaborator, somebody in a position of power that's working against the interests of black people, position of power or influence. Just like on the plantation, when the guy that worked in the house or whatever was always had his eyes going so he could go back in the house and tell what was going on. He was in a little different position than the guy in the field, but he had the eyes and ears to know what was going on in the field and in the house. That's what I'm talking about.
Well, Elliot, I would hope this that Representative Richmond wouldn't be down with that. Now,
Richmond was just reporting on what was said to him.
Got you, Elliot.
In Colorado Springs said. That's an old tactic used by Europeans, period. They always meet with a bunch of blacks and then throw out some bait, knowing in their mind that if they throw it out among 20 people, that one going to bite. And see, that one that bites can do serious damage.
And Ellie, let me say this to you and Brother Richard straight up. I love Brother Scotty and everything. And again, I know like Brother Ralph said, Ralph made some good points then when he called it a minute ago. I disagree with Brother Scotty respectfully, and I know Brother Scotty means well and stuff. And I don't claim to be no know-it-all or whatever like that, but I'd say Brother Scotty is definitely fooling himself if he thinks for one minute that them Negroes that get that money from these white bigot owners, they're going to get to any grassroots organization. It's not going to happen, Elliot and Richard. It's not happening.
Oh, I already know that. I already said who's going to get
it. That's what I'm saying. The usual suspects is going to get it. The NAACP. The Urban League, they might let some funnel to the United Negro College Fund. I mean, and again, I'm not knocking. Don't say that some of those groups don't do some good. They know they could do a whole lot better than what they do. But as far as Black Lives Matter, 1 million black voters and contributors, the Nation of Islam, any of the so-called groups that outside of the devil's mainstream, white devil's mainstream, they ain't getting none of that.
Well, they're on the black identity extremist list.
Exactly.
So how are you going to get billionaire white owners who basically are Republican, and they're going to be given to black identity extremists?
That ain't happening.
Listen, as far as white folks are concerned, Black Talk Radio Network is full of black identity extremists.
Exactly, exactly. That's right. Because you had a devil over on a terrestrial station that used to be at Elliot, where the devil called into the talk show, and he told Brother Rob, when Brother Rob used to have a show over there, he told Brother Rob, something need to be done about you, Negro. He didn't say the N-word in front of the N-I-G-G-E-I thing, but he said, y'all Negroes, that's what he said, because y'all preaching this hate against white people on this station, and y'all need to be monitored and dealt with, because all y'all do on this station is bash white people all the time. He said, we got people minding y'all. We got the ADL. I mean, this double city center. Brother Rob, make it off my phone. Brother Rob ran that bigot off his phone. He said, get off my phone with that foolishness and stuff, man. But the point is, the white boys said the truth, because like you said, Elliot, they look at us all on black. You saying, if you're not saying singing red, white, and blue, you're looked upon as being an extremist. If you're not kissing white folks' butt, saying America is great, like that dummy, like the dimwit in the White House talking about make America great again, how can it be great again when it never was great? You know what I mean? So you got this kind of mindset that you're dealing with and stuff, man. So it's definitely wishful thinking to think that any kind of money is going to be going into grassroots, because it's not going to happen. Matter of fact, Minister Farrakhan said in the final call how the Naismith's time is going to increase in the tax. And so Naismith's time getting it twofold for two reasons, as you know, Brother Ellen Richard. This country is definitely anti-black. We can agree on that, correct?
Well, certainly. Mm-hmm.
All right? And we also know they're anti-Islamic. And I don't happen to be a Muslim, but that's here to there. But the point is, the nation gets in it both ways because you got this and even before the Dunwit came in the White House, you have had this anti-Islamic fervor in this country, these Islamic phobia, if you will. So the nation of Islam catching it twofold. They're getting hit because of the fact that they are black group, so-called militant group, and the fact that they Muslims. So they're getting a double egg sword, you know what I mean? But I mean, again, these people, man, again, I tried to get, like you said, like I told you, I tried to get Malcolm Jenkins the benefit of the doubt, but when the brother's doing stuff that is against the for the better good, I got to call him for what he is. I can't sugarcoat it. I just got to call it for what he is. I think what Malcolm Jenkins and Antoine Bolden doing is disgraceful. They letting the white man play the old game, like you said, Ellie, divide and conquer. Because like you said, this man don't change his tone. He does it all the time. That's what he always does. Even on jobs that we go on, a 9-to-5, the white man, the devil's so slick. What he'll do, especially if he's a racist bigot, he'll purposely be friendly with a couple of Negroes on the job, Elliot. You know what I'm saying? And Richard, because I've seen it happen on jobs I worked on. He'll be the most racist redneck out there, but he'll get friendly with a couple of Negroes on the job, and then they'll go around saying, see, Joe and Elliot, y'all guys, and Richard, y'all make everything race. See, Mr. Seymour, he's not a racist because he cool, because, you know, I was over his house, we watched the game together and stuff like, we watched the Eagles game together, and I went to his cookout, and he showed me some pictures when he was in college, how he was out with some of his black family. Niggas will say stupid stuff like that, because the white man is slick enough to know all you got to do is just siphon them Negroes off one by one, cozy up the couple of them, be friendly with them, and them Negroes will sing your praises and stuff. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, well, let me say this before we move on.
Go ahead, Elliot.
You know, I'm just a working guy. Mm-hmm. I'm no different than any of those other guys. They got a few more dollars than me. But I don't want to minimize it and say, well, these men are just entertainers. You know, they're men, and they're supposed to be black men. Dave Richardson said on there, he said, I was a black man first. Then I'm a representative. Those are supposed to be black men.
That's right.
Paul Robeson was an entertainer. He was an athlete, and he was an actor. So he was an entertainer, but he was a black man. Dick Gregory was an entertainer. He was a comedian there joking around, but he was a black man. So I'm not going to minimize and say, oh, these guys are just entertainers. They're supposed to be black men. And if they don't know enough about their situation, because some of them, when they open their mouth, you see they don't know what the hell's going on. But if they don't know enough about their situation, then go educate themselves.
That's right.
Or latch on to somebody that can help them educate themselves. Because we're in serious times.
Because
our people are at a crossroads.
I agree.
And they're building these prisons. They might not be building them for me and you, but they're building them for your nephews, your nieces, your children.
Yes.
This is serious times.
Mm-hmm. And see, L.A., let me say this. I'll say these last couple things and get off. See, L.A., it's no excuse. For like Minister, like the Honorable Minister Farrakhan said, there's no excuse for a black man and woman to be so ignorant today. I mean, you even go back in the day, back in the '20s when it was legal lynching. You had sisters and brothers, like you said, that was conscious. I remember back, Ellie, when you and Richard was on last year, you marveled at how them brothers, even during slavery time, how the brothers was black Congress people, how they went to them devils back, even back 18 something, and told them, look, we want our own thing, Flan. We don't want to be governed by y'all. We want to determine our own self determination. Remember that, Elliot? And that was when you made that comment. That was back then. And stuff. So it's no, and we didn't have social media, didn't have Facebook and Twitter and Instagram, the internet and all that stuff. So it's no excuse for a black man or woman today, whether it be an athlete, an entertainer, just a working class black. And I'm not everybody. No, we look. Everybody's not going to be Malcolm X or Harriet Tubman. I mean, nobody's saying that. But there's no excuse for you to be walking around so damn ignorant and stuff that they not knowing anything, just being a fool. That's the point I'm saying, Ellen and Richie, you know what I mean? Because there's too much stuff out there for you. All you got to do is just do the research. It's too much stuff out there. So when you got a nigga that's talking so crazy, like you said, when some of these cats open up their mouth, they sound so damn crazy and stuff and stupid. But and there's no excuse for that, because like I said, there's too much stuff out there today for you to sound that way.
Yeah,
that's
well,
all I'm saying.
And before I let you go, you're right. Yeah. Everybody's not going to be a Malcolm or Martin or any other. But we don't have to be, what's his name, Richard? You would know. What's his name? Turned in Marcus Garvey.
That worked against him. Yeah, I don't know. I don't remember his name, but I know who you're talking about.
I think the first name was Haywood something or another. I forgot. But listen, that man was set up by the government to be a businessman in Harlem, in the community. People knew him. He worked himself into the inner circle of Marcus Garvey, and his whole objective was to bring him down.
When you look at two quick examples, look what the recent thing happened over there in Libya. It was some Gaddafi's inner circle got brought off by Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama to do Gaddafi and same thing in Zimbabwe. But Mugabe, his guy that was out in the struggle with Mugabe all those years, was with him out in the toughest times. He turned on Mugabe, man. He started with them CIA operatives and turned on the brother and stuff like that, man. That's what I'm saying. See the white man know Elliot and Rich. Some of these Negroes, male or female, you know, a lot of these Negroes got a price, man. It just come down to how much and stuff. And it's sad to be us brothers and sisters like that, man. They could be down with the struggle, but, you know, like as Brother Richard, as Brother Jay would say, when the Sky Daddy start throwing some of them jewels at some of these Negroes, they're turn coke, man. They could be in the struggle for 30, 40 years strong, and they'll let themselves be co-opted by a few things of silver and gold. I mean,
yeah,
it's
well,
sad, man.
But, and keep in mind, Joe,
all our
people are not like that, but if it's one can do damage.
Hey, and that's my point I'm saying. Thank God a lot of us not like that, because we definitely wouldn't have no hope. But like you said, just one being like that out of 10 is still bad, or one being out of 20 is bad. Like you said, like, we're in a position now as a people, we can't afford to deal with none of them. We can't afford to have none of them collaborators doing that stuff. So one is one too many. That's what I'm saying, okay, Ellen Richard? One is one too many.
Thank you for your call.
All right, thanks, my brothers. Uh-huh.
Let's go to 646.
Sweet Low, Sweet Charity. How could it be?
Here we go. How you doing, brother?
How could it be that the Negro is now going to sell out other Negroes for trinkets? Now, I must disagree with my brother Scotty on this regard, man. I don't know what this Negro getting out of this deal, but from my understanding, the deal hasn't even gone through because the whole body ain't going for it. Mm. It don't sound right. It's a little fishy. You know what I'm saying? I mean, and you know, where's the money supposed to go? You know, black fist up in the air, he talking about he going to accept the money. But them brothers ain't going for that. So, I mean, I don't know. Just another Negro that want to have his face shown to the daddy. And, you know, had the daddy, you know, give him his little bit of trinkets and, you know, it's all good. little bit of popcorn, ice cream, or whatever, you know. You know, I mean, hey, listen. The man head is bald, man. He ain't got no hair on his head. So, you know, the daddy could pat him on the head and don't cut his hand or anything like that or get no dandruff on it. You know what I mean? He clean shaving up on that dome. But listen, man, seriously, what I'm calling about, man, is a couple of things. Number one, I'm gonna give y'all a good laugh. It seems like Mommy Joy Reid, back in the day, maybe 8 to 10 years ago, was making some homophobic slurs in her blogs against this little degenerate, you know, senator in Florida where she was living, and now it may be coming back to corner because she's apologizing and everything. You know, they don't went back and did their homework on her and found out she was saying some nasty things about this guy, Chris, who was, I guess, a congressman or something, you know, who they found out was, you know, a freak. You know, so now she's got to apologize. But I was on Twitter trying to tell her, you know, it's nothing wrong with apologizing, sis, but at least when you apologize, could you please wear a better wig? Lord have mercy.
Who are you talking about? I missed. Who's this?
Joy Ann Reid, the chick on MSNBC.
Oh, okay.
How you get on TV and you got your bad wig, man? You know, I really don't like women when they get on TV and don't have a good wig. When you make the type of money she makes, you get you a good wig. You don't get you no bad wigs. You know, the sisters, I don't know why the sisters ain't upset about this. Get you a good wig and get your nails done. You know, I'm always noticing the nails ain't done right and the wig ain't too tight. You got to get a Maxine Water wig. You know what I mean?
That's so you ain't cream right.
Cream of the crop, man. No, seriously. You come on TV and you going to represent black women. You represent black women at the finest level of wisdom. You don't have no wig on your hair. So you know, she's apologizing now. So let's see, maybe they'll suspend her. You know, maybe they'll make her do a little dance or whatever. You know, but she's such a good Negro and a loyal Negro to the Democratic Party. I don't know. They may give sis a pass. You know what I mean? And now, number two, Jared Kushner. I'm hoping that he'll be in jail so I could send him a nice tube of KY jelly. That's what I'm hoping for Jared Kushner because he's guilty. I'm going on record now saying he's guilty of something. I don't know what it is, but he's guilty of something. It seems to me that Flynn is going to do him and maybe his father-in-law. Because it seems like he don't want to see his baby boy go to jail. Which, you know, I can respect that. I mean, you know, he's a white man, so I can really care less. But it seems like he's doing the honorable thing, and, you know, he's not going to allow his son to go to jail if he can help it. And he's willing to, you know, do on Trumpy Trumpster and old Jared. So I'm hoping that Jared get what he deserves because Jared Kushner and his family are some of the most foulest human beings on the planet, the way that they treat everyday people. Because, you know, they're heavy into renting apartments to, you know, lower class, middle income people. And they love to do everything that they can to get them out their apartments, especially when they're under rent control so that they can jack up the rent and all of that. So I'm hoping that maybe this will be calmer and this will be his payback. So let's keep our fingers crossed and our toes crossed and hope that, you know, I can find out what federal penitentiary cupcake place they'll send them in. I'll come on the airways and I'll ask for 50-cent donation from your listeners so we could get them a nice box of KY jelly and send it to them.
Well, keep in mind this, Jay. Haldeman, Ehrlichman, Mitchell, and Dean, if I recall, they didn't do no jail time, did they? And neither did what's his name? You know, that general doing the Iran-Contra?
Oh, Ali North.
Yeah, Ali North. So,
Colonel. Yeah.
What's Colonel?
Right,
okay.
Right.
So, you know, this is just a show.
I'm putting it out there, though.
Mm-hmm.
Because I want to see Kushner be like his daddy and do some jail time. Because, you know, they come from a very foul creed, man. I mean, you know, just to tell a quickly story about his daddy. His daddy's so gangster that he had a problem with his sister because of their real estate dealings, and he went out there and hired a prostitute to seduce the sister's husband, filmed it, and sent it to the sister. Now, you know, that's a hell of a type of guy there, bro. Now, could you imagine someone doing that to you? And that's your sister? How could you do that to your sister? Lord have mercy. But
it shows the network of type of people that is around Trump.
Yes, the death.
And what they have been about, and now, you know, you raised Jay for me, which, you know, just to be able to say, when they walk away, whether they walk away in 4 years or 8 years, they walk away with knowing all the international, as much as they're going to let them know, all the international things that they can go after, that their children can go after. Because these guys are old, so they ain't going to be going after too much more. But now they done set it up that they are now the power brokers, the gangsters, legitimate gangsters. This is like the when they give you the story of the Cuban mafia, the mafia that went and did what with Cuba, now that they done moved to the White House.
That's it. And you could see, man, how this thing is going to definitely play out now that, you know, what they've done with this whole tax reform thing, which is just as criminal as they come. You know, there's a special place in hell for people like that dirtbag, John McCain. You know, everybody tries to make John McCain out to be a hero. But, you know, in all truthfulness, John McCain is one of the main reasons why this country is having the problems that it's having. Because he was the one who brought that piece of garbage, Sarah Palin, into the public sphere that led to the Tea Party and the Cruises and the rest of them wing nuts. That led to birtherism, that gave us this piece of garbage, Donald Trump, that has now led to this. You know what I mean? Really, truthfully. If we really look at what has happened over the last 9 years that has led to this. But so, nobody will call it out for what it really is. Because if we didn't have Sarah Palin and her foolishness, and he just picked someone other than trying to counter-react the fact that he was running against a mulatto, you know what I mean, Obama, who, if he really understood, and which I knew he knew, was whiter than the whitest of the whitest of white men, and was no threat, and wasn't going to do anything to screw the empire, you know, that he tried and he used that white woman there who was just as stupid and more stupider than Trump. You know what I mean? Who are meant to be brothers and sisters, you know, in the boondocks or whatever the hell you want to put them at. we wouldn't be in this situation because, let's be honest, once he came into play, then it was the Tea Party, then that whole Tea Party nonsense led to bursarism, and that whole bursarism gave us this fool Trump. And then it metamorphosed into him becoming the president, and now we just in a total weird space. But nobody connects those type of dots. You know what I mean? And now when you think about it, where is Sarah Palin? She's somewhere getting paid. Where is the bursarism movement? It's still out there whenever it needs to pop up. Where the Tea Party, the so-called fiscal conservatives, at now? You know what I mean? Why aren't they up in arms about this tax bill, which is absolutely going to skyrocket the debt of this society? You know what I mean? Think about it. But, you know, John McCain, you know, he's such a hero. But you know something? The beautiful thing is that the bastard is going to die a beautiful death. You know what I mean? He's going to die a beautiful death. And all the opiates and all of the stuff that they're going to give him to try and keep him comfortable and all of that, he's going to die. And that's it. You know what I'm saying? Because the thing is, he's now made it towards where there's going to be millions of people that are not even going to get the opportunity to live as long as he's living, because they're not even going to be able to afford the medical services, because he couldn't do the right thing and say no to this tax bill, which, you know, I don't know if he had that type of money. And I wouldn't be surprised if he didn't have that type of money to transfer it on to his family members, because you know that inheritance tax was one of the big things that they wanted, because they want to be able to transfer them big bucks off to their kids and things of that, and not have to pay that tax on it.
Right.
You see, so these are the things that are in play that nobody's really talking about. And the thing that's so frustrating is that, you know, the Democrats who these Negroes love so much, they have no agenda in place to kind of attack this. They have nothing in place to deal with this. You know what I'm saying? So now hereby, in a couple of years, when I would say next year probably, or the year after, I would say after the year after, because they got to wait for the 2018 elections to happen, when they start the attack on Social Security and Medicaid and Medicare, you know, and all the other things that they're going to do to have to make up for the type of debt that we're going to face, the Democrats are not going to have anything in place. And if they do have control of the Congress and the Senate, they ain't going to do anything to stop it. You know, because they're going to be worried that if they do anything to stop it, then the bastard may stay in office. You know, so I mean, it's just a vicious cycle who the people who are responsible for this are not honestly being called out, and are not honestly being dealt with. And in the process, we as a people are getting destroyed because we don't have a plan nor an agenda or leadership that are trying to guide us out of this quagmire. They're just trying to protect their position. It's like, you know, you hear the Negro woman talk about, well, you want conquers. You want Congress to go. You want him to go, but you don't want Al Franken to go. But yo, this black Negro been in office for 40-some years, and his community is absolutely decimated. So what is the purpose of keeping his black ass in office anyway? Al Franken, he's in the Senate. This guy's in Congress. I mean, so now you got to equate, well, if you want let one go, then you got to let the other go. So, I mean, it's just a game being played of tit for tat when, you know, I mean, how do you give up someone like an Al Franken who's office for over 40-some years, and ain't really done a damn thing. Why? Because he's done talked about put forward reparations. Now, listen, I support reparations just as much as anybody else, but you and I both know that the reality of us getting reparations is a pipe dream. But let's take into consideration, what has he done about the crises in Flint? What has he done about the crises in Detroit? What's going on there? You know what I'm saying? What type of real power does he have to make the necessary improvement of the lives in not only his district, but in his state and in his city? So, I mean, we just need to, at some point in time, just be honest about who and what we're dealing with these politicians. The black politician in office, in all truthfulness, ain't worth a damn. And they even more not worth a damn collectively, because if you notice, they don't really do anything. They don't really do anything. They all they do is when they shine is when they make these flashy statements. You know what I mean? When Maxine Waters go out there and she may impeach and all of these other, you know, slogans and all of these things to make people feel good. You know what I mean? That's all it is. But what real work has they honestly done to improve the position of our people in their communities? Because if you notice, most of their communities, if their community is worse than them, is being gentrified, and they're not stopping that. They haven't protected the community from being gentrified or anything else whenever white folks decide they want to come in and take care of business and take it back from us. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you know, it's just sad because they have no real fight for us. They have no real vision for us. They have nothing. They're not going to challenge anything or anyone. You're just going to hear them speak the same thing, impeach the fool. You know, now he may get impeached. If the tax bill goes through, I mean, think about this. Once the tax bill goes through, don't you think their attitude towards him is going to change? Because he fulfilled what they've been wanting him to do for years. That's what they've been looking to get done this whole tax thing. They wasn't able to do it when Obama was in office, and Obama was going to give them some trinkets to do it. That's the crazy thing. It wasn't like, if truth be told, Obama said that he was, you know, not against making changes to Medicaid, Social Security, and all other types of entitlement programs. He never said he wouldn't do it. But, you know, hey, they played their cards right. They gerrymandered certain positions. They did certain things to make it to whereas they was able to get this piece of garbage in office. And now, you know, they got the votes, and they did their thing. You know what I mean? Because you don't have stand-up principled people to say no. They know it's wrong. They know that this tax bill is going to destroy everyday people. It's not gonna benefit.
Yeah, well, you're dealing with people that don't care. Well, yeah. I mean, you know the deal, Jay.
All right. Well, listen,
thank you,
man,
for your call,
y'all,
man.
Brothers, keep on doing what y'all doing. And was y'all on the air Friday night?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, I didn't know. I didn't. I tried to listen, but I guess I didn't think y'all was on. Have a good night.
We thought you was giving me a break.
No, no, no. I thought, you know what had happened? I must have turned it on at the wrong time, and I didn't think y'all was on. But, you know, Richard, I'm always happy to hear you on Sunday because you sound so refreshed, you know, and rejuvenated. You know what I mean? Because Master ain't able to whip you on Saturday and Sunday. You know what I mean? But I got you next Friday. Have a good night, brother.
Peace.
<All right>.
Let's go to 757.
Hey, what's up, man?
Oh, great.
How you feeling?
I'm going to try to run across a few things because I don't like to take up a lot of time because I get a lot of information from you guys. Number one, I touched on Africa earlier when I called into you because you focused on it about 2 weeks ago, talking about the U.S. role having foot soldiers in Africa. And I told you about my conversation with Earl, yoga master.
Mm-hmm.
And I told him 53 countries out of 54 in Africa had U.S. troops, and he told me that was a stretch.
Okay.
So I want to get back to something else here. For people to focus on Trump, and I'm 64 years old, and I'm going to try to go through it quickly. I'm 64 years old. Trump, per se, is not the problem. Everybody who's paid attention to politics understands that for the last 7 years, Mitch McConnell, who at that time was a minority lead in the House, in the Senate, actually, Ryan in the House, said that they were doing obstructionism. All we heard on national news was obstructionism. So now that the Grover Norquist agenda, which he said, we don't need a mastermind. We don't need anybody with a new agenda. All we need is someone with enough digits to hold a pen and sign a document. That is exactly what we are experiencing right now. The GOP, which are all about billionaires, have full control of all three segments of government, and that's what they're doing. Now, I want to touch on something else. The reason you can't get any productivity from the CBC is because black misleadership class has assimilated into America. All they did is to get for personal gain. It doesn't matter whether it's Clyburn or it doesn't matter whether it's John Lewis, who said he thanked the cop that knocked him in the head. So I'm in full compliance with Bro Elliott when you're talking about collaborators. I disagree with Scotty even when he talks about the NFL because Reed made it perfectly plain that he understood when the NFL came to him and said, we'll give you $100 million, guess what the details about that are? It's a seven-year plan, and the players also have to contribute to sales of memorabilia. So you got to worry about details when you deal with a white man.
Wow.
I learned that early on in my life from farmers here in Yorktown, Virginia, in the heart of the Confederacy, Virginia, where race became an established part of America, right here at Beacon's Rebellion. So I'm saying to you, you cannot fall for headlines when you're dealing with the nuances of what's going on in this country. Reed was perfectly true when he said, I cannot go along with Jackson because it's not about money. It is about people dying in the street.
Yes.
We don't want you to take money away from breast cancer and now realign it somewhere else because that's what's in your budget. So I don't see it as just gaining a few dollars to advance yourself. You have to worry about where is that money going? Who is supplying that money? Who does it affect, and how does it affect them? And let me get to another thing that you covered when I heard Jay talking. It's not just about Trump. It's about realizing that people with money had paid black people to be in positions just like Denzel Washington to tell you that the reason you haven't succeeded as a race is because there's not enough fathers in the house. Hell, our whole existence here has been white people extrapolating fathers from the family. So that cannot be the only reason that we're not progressing as a people. I yield the floor.
Brother, thanks for your call.
Hey, Elliot, if I can, I think this article that I wanted to just pull out this one part in relationship to politics before you go back to the next caller, because it hopefully it fits in
where this the article states the reforms going through Congress clearly reflect the party's priority. And one paragraph, he says, he says, how does a part of political party dedicate to the material interest of the top 0.1% of the income distribution win and hold power in a universally suffrage democracy? And then he asks the question, how, one must ask, has a party with such objectives successfully gained power in all? We can see three mutually supportive answers to the question. And I want to go to the third one, the third point, as he calls it. The third approach is to foment cultural and ethnic splits. This is sometimes described as the Southern strategy, which shifts the old South from the Democrats to the Republicans after the former enacted civil rights. Yet this is too limited a view. More interesting is the echo of antebellum South itself. Now we remember with that Southern strategy was done under Reagan, where they were Democrats and then they became Republican. So he goes to say, the pre-Civil War South was extremely unequal, not just in the population as a whole, which included the slaves, but even among free whites. A standard measure of inequality jumped by 70% among whites between 1774 and 1860. As the academic Peter Lindart and Jeffrey Williamson note, any historian looking at the rise of poor white underclass in the Old South will find it in this evidence. The 1860 census also showed that the median wealth of the richest 1% of Southerners were more than three times of the richest 1% of Northerners. Yet the South was always far less dynamic. The South was a plutocracy. In the Civil War, whose stated aim was the defense of slavery, close to 300,000 Confederate soldiers died, and a majority of these men had no slaves, yet their racial and cultural fears justified the sacrifice. Ultimately, this mobilization brought death or defeat upon them all. Nothing better reveals the political potency of identity. And it seems that this tax bill brings that echo, because what Trump was able to, and what he's marshaling is, you know, those groups, that group of that Southern strategy that was Democrats, what they called them, Dixiecrats, and then they became a part of the Republican Party. And I keep projecting that, again, Trump didn't win the popular vote. He won the electoral vote, which was the combination of those Southern states, those Midwestern states, which was the expansion of slavery after the Louisiana, the question about the Louisiana Purchase, you know, whether it was they were going to be free states or slave states, and the Missouri Compromise solved that, which, what is that, John Brown, which was the white abolitionist that wanted to get the blacks to fight against the white slavocracy in order to end slavery. It seems that this tax bill really reinvigorates that, the racial split, the class split, and the point that these poor whites will identify, even though they will be cut by it, they will identify with Trump and the wealthy getting that portion, regardless of how much it affects them. I just thought that was interesting. and hearing what Jay said to raise that that we can place that wealth gap back to the South.
Wow. You know, we're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, Richard will start winding things down. I don't think let's see. We might have room for one more call. You can get involved at 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. A couple of minutes. We'll be right back. Oh, boy. Got the wrong thing. I thought I had a commercial queued up. I'll tell you what we'll do. Let me read this announcement because I didn't read it in the beginning of the program. African Independence Day Organization Committee and the Urban Shaman Productions present the second annual Buy Black Marketplace and Pre-Kwanzaa Celebration. It's Saturday, December 23rd, 2017, at the historic Church of the Advocate, 1801 Diamond Street here in Philadelphia. The admission is $5 at the door. Children are admitted absolutely free. Be special guest performances, speakers, the ceremonial lighting of the Kanara, and vendors are always needed. For more information, you can contact them three ways. By email at africanindependenceday@gmail.com. You can go to the website at africanindependenceday.org, or you can give them a call at 267-521-1544. Again, that's 267-521-1544. That's the Buy Black Marketplace and Pre-Kwanzaa Celebration, Saturday, December 23rd, 2017, at the historic Church of the Advocate, 1801 Diamond Street in Philadelphia. The admission is $5 at the door, and children are admitted absolutely free. We're starting out the new week, and we got the top of the order. The bat's on his shoulders, and he's ready to go Monday morning at 10 o'clock. Brother Oshie with African Perspectives will be here from 11 to 1 on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. That's African Perspectives with Brother Oshie from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. on Wednesday. Sister POC is back with Revive on Wednesday evening, 8 o'clock, 8 to 10. That's Sister POC and the program Revive. On Thursday, Us Lifting Us, a black economic program, Ulu. They'll be here on Thursday evening from 9 to 11. Back on Fridays with the African Perspectives in the morning, 11 to 1. And Time for Awakening back on Friday evening from 8 to 10. Then on Saturday, Brother Troy is back with SST, Saturday Sports Talk with Troy Wilmore. That's Saturday morning, 10 o'clock to 12 noon. And before the month is out, and I know in early January we'll have some other programs being added. Again, the website is being revamped to accommodate the podcast of the new programs. So there'll be some changes there. So we're just moving forward on what we're doing, Brother Richard.
Yes, we are.
I want to thank the listening audience for being with us this evening. A lively discussion, as always, and we'll be back on Friday, Lord willing, to continue on this path towards an awakening. Peace.
If you're driving through the country on a lazy afternoon, or you're watching your children playing after school, they seem to be so unaware. I know, I know.
enough to take care of. We've got to do something, yeah, to save the children. Play such a small part of